You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone. This is Angie from Creatures Podcast. Have you ever wondered what the natural world sounds like when you really listen? Well, the team behind the new Apple TV documentary series, Earth Sounds, has done just that. They've spent over 3 years capturing the unexpected and untold sonic stories of our planet. From the mesmerizing hum of deserts to the haunting love songs of snow leopards, this new series uses cutting-edge technology to reveal a world buzzing with sounds that we've never heard before. And today I'm so thrilled to have the Earth Sounds producers, Alex Williamson and Sam Hodgsons, join me today to share the incredible stories behind the making of Earth Sounds, which recently premiered on Apple TV. So get ready to have your ears open to the wonders of our natural world. We'll be diving deep into the innovating sound recording techniques they used, the most remarkable animal vocalizations I've ever heard, and how this series and this team aim to inspire greater appreciation and protection of our precious ecosystems. So welcome, Sam and Alex. It's a two-for-one interview. I love these. Hello.
Thanks, Angie.
It's great to be here.
Nice to meet you.
Oh my gosh, I'm so in love with this series, so I can't wait to talk all about it. But before we dive into that, can you give our listeners a little background on how you became a nature documentary series creator and producer? Like, which came first, the love of nature or the love of film?
That's a very good question. So for me, I've always had a great love of nature. I grew up in the countryside and the South Downs in England, and always loved the natural world. Studied zoology at university, sort of particular sort of interest in animal behaviour and studying sort of animal behaviour, and from there I worked in radio for quite a few years. I worked for BBC Radio in the sort of news capacity and as a producer, but desperately wanted to get into natural history, broadcasting, filmmaking. Through some trial and error and badgering a lot of people, sort of got my break and spent 2 decades now making wildlife films around the planet.
So inspiring. And how about you, Alex? How did you land here? Such a cool job.
So I'm kind of the opposite. So I was television first, and I spent a stint of time in Los Angeles in the States making a show, an engineering show called Junkyard Wars, it was called in America.
My kids would love that. I'll have to check it out.
A completely different world of TV. So, and then did a lot of specialist factual shows here in the UK, kind of, I guess, earth sciences, geography, people stories. And then I moved to Bristol in the UK about 15 years ago. And basically, Bristol is the hub of natural history. And it is a hotbed of just amazing people, talent, stories. And it's an irresistible urge to kind of get involved. And so I guess I kind of had my eyes opened when I moved down here and been making predominantly wildlife shows. We still do some human stories. But I tell you what, animals are just so much easier to work with than humans, and they're just so much nicer as well. I mean, I love people, but animals are fantastic, and they're so. For me, it's the beauty and the genius of the natural world, which is always so spellbinding, and that's what makes it so rewarding telling those stories.
Oh, absolutely. And you actually took one of my jokes. I was going to say, who's better to work with, people or animals? And knowing the answer is 100% animals. And they're just, they're so inspiring to watch their behavior. It's just, it's an easy win for everyone involved, which is why I love this series. And so, Alex, if you'll follow up a little bit in my next question, as far as you've done another series in 2020 for Apple TV called Earth at Night in Color. So that's, if any listeners haven't checked that out, phenomenal. That's a different podcast for a different day. It's incredible work. So what inspired the idea then for this new series, Earth Sounds? And how and why did you want to tackle this beast to tell these sonic stories that people have literally never heard that these creatures are telling us?
This is a great question. So the idea behind it was hear our planet differently. And there's so much natural history out there. We're always looking for new angles, new takes. So the last series, Earth at Night in Color, used new technology to see into the night in a different way. And the idea for this series was pretty simple. It was, there's a whole world of amazing sounds buzzing around out there, which we can't hear with our human hearing. So we were turning to new technology to allow us to kind of eavesdrop and listen to these secret communications, conversations that are going on in the natural world. And by doing that, we open up a whole new world of stories. And for us, it's all about story. And, you know, in nature, we think we've seen them all. We've seen countless cheetahs hunting gazelle on the African plains. And by taking a slightly different slice into the natural world, it offered a completely different suite of stories, characters. And you could tell the interesting stories of weird little spiders and tiny little bugs the size of a grain of rice, which would normally get overlooked. So the concept behind the series was pretty simple. It was 12 episodes, 12 journeys into sound, into these 12 different soundscapes. And we start each episode off by launching the audience into these sound worlds and then traveling deeper and deeper through them. And by doing that, we can kind of meet weird and unusual characters. Also some of the usual sort of big hitters. There's some cool lions in there, some snow leopards, there's some great humpbacks. And it basically shows two things for me. One is the amazing ways that animals use sound. And as a visual species, we tend to use sound just to communicate. But they're using it in all sorts of weird and wonderful ways. They use it as a weapon. They use it to navigate. There's a tiny spider that uses it as a kind of sedative. So there's really crazy ways. And also the weird ways they create sound. So birds that use their wings, like a violin bow, we've got exploding shrimp, we've got, bugling elk. So all these weird and wonderful ways. And it's basically asking the audience to experience the world in a slightly different way and showing there's more to nature than meets the eye.
Well, and your team has definitely captured that for this animal nerd over here, because I've been lucky enough, I've watched several episodes of Earth Sounds, and I really find myself on the edge of my seats because the cinematography, it's beautiful visually, right? But I'm also hitting the rewind button on my recorder, because I need to re-listen to some of these sounds that your team is capturing, because I just can't hear it once. I've never heard it before. It doesn't really even make sense sometimes. And I think as of recently, this is the most series that I've been rewinding and like rewatching several clips per episode to make sure that I'm really fully embracing everything that's going on. And of course, as an animal nerd, I'm learning so much from big animals, but also even, of course, as you mentioned, some of these tiny, small guys that often get overlooked. Even for me, I am a hoof stock. Anything with hoofs and horns is like my jam. It's what I studied. And here I am watching the Himalayan episode too. And this churu, I think you call it, or Tibetan antelope, comes in bellowing. And I'm like, I've never heard this species. I've definitely never heard this noise before. I'm rewinding it. I'm literally sending videos to my nerdy friends and my husband, of course. And I loved it. He didn't know what it was either. So I was wondering, I mean, this series, as you mentioned, 12 episodes, diverse habitats, from rainforest to coral reefs. I'd love to start with you, Sam, and if you could tell me, what were some of the most remarkable and or surprising animal sounds that you were able to record during the production? And then I'm going to if you had to pick one, I'm going to ask a tough question.
Well,
do you have a favorite? So some remarkable ones, surprising ones, and a favorite. Go, Sam.
Well, the chiwi you mentioned is a really, really good example of a story that's just hasn't been told, and the sounds have rarely been recorded and rarely heard before. And the chiwi, they're very unusual looking hoofed animals, aren't they? They're the sort of the original sort of origin of the unicorn, they believe, because they look almost like sort of unicorns, and they have these crazy, the males have these crazy acoustic battles. So that's one example of a story of a great bit of behavior, and people may have seen chiwi before, but hearing their sort of these crazy sort of shouting matches they have on the Tibetan plateau is a great story. I think it's so hard to pick a favorite. I think the most unusual for me is the Atlantic walrus in the polar episode. And this was a story our team were actually up in the Arctic to record and film a different behavior. They were hoping to record the love songs of the bearded seal, which give these strange sort of eerie whistles underwater and on cue, just like that.
I love it.
And so that's what we were up there to record. And we were working with a brilliant Norwegian sound recordist called Jana Vindran, who specializes in Arctic sound and recording Arctic sounds. She's been doing it for sort of two decades. But Jana was out on the water just off the sort of ice sheet, and she was dangling her sort of hydrophones into the water to record the underwater sounds. And she suddenly started hearing this strange knocking. It sounded like somebody knocking a hammer into a piece of wood in an echoey room, and it wasn't the sound she was expecting to hear. And then a walrus popped up right next to the boat, sort of checking her out. And these group of, it was about sort of five or six juvenile males that then approached the boat. And perhaps there was something with the boat or the microphones that interested them. But they hung around and they put on this most extraordinary acoustic display, which it's been very rarely seen or heard before. And it's just some of the craziest sounds. So there's the hammering I mentioned. There's a gong sound, which sounds like somebody smacking a gong and metal sort of vibrating. And when the field producer came back from the trip, we played these sounds. We was like, "Are you sure they're real? Are you sure not somebody banging? You know, we're not being taken for a ride." But we weren't. And the extraordinary thing about the Atlantic walrus is they believe they've got the longest love songs of any mammal. So the males put on these extraordinary displays in the mating season, and they can go on for sort of more than 65 hours. So it's a real sort of long, it's sort of an endurance, you know, the one who's sort of gonging last sort of, you know, might get lucky, might get a female. But I think
that is commitment. That is some serious commitment.
That's a long time. So I think that for me, that would be my most surprising sound.
Yeah, I thought Taylor Swift's Eras Tour with 3 hours. I'm like, that is record breaking, but I think the walrus might win, right? Yeah. And how about you, Alex? What were some remarkable sounds that you learned about and or if you have a favorite?
Yeah, well, there's so many. I think lyrebirds. I absolutely love lyrebirds. An Australian bird is a master mimic. So they can mimic all sorts of other birds in the forest. And one of the cool things about the series is we didn't just want to go out and record the sounds of nature. We wanted to do it differently and, you know, innovate and explore and pioneer new ways of capturing sound. And so with the lyrebirds, we put remote microphones in and around the forest and in and around their little nests that they create, they're kind of little amphitheaters. Mm. And we left them running so that we could get these really intimate close-up sounds of the lyrebirds calling. And they're just brilliant. They can mimic 20, 30 different other songbirds in the forest. But then what was fascinating was we took that sound and we recorded it particularly high res, a bit like 4K for sound. And then we slowed the sound down. So um, we, we were working with scientists on a new technique called time stretching. So basically you take the sound, you slow it down. It's a bit like slow-mo footage. We've seen a lot of shots of slow-mo animals. It was slow-mo sound. And by listening to the lyrebird singing in super slow-mo, you could begin to hear little trills and little elements of their song, which are too fast for the human ear. And what we can show and see from that is that they have two voice boxes. Well, actually, it's a sort of bird equivalent of a voice box, but they're using these two different voice boxes, one to create the high notes and one the low notes. And that's how they can become such amazing vocalists. So it's kind of stories like that. And I love lyrebirds. Also, the sounds of the planet as well, which was something we weren't kind of, I think I'd underestimated when we first started the series. And when we originally pitched it, we pitched it to Apple TV Plus, who we've worked on a couple of shows with, and they're great partners because they have the resource and the ambition to tell stories differently. And when we originally pitched it, which I thought was a good sign, they said, this sounds like a radio show. So I thought, okay, we're onto something here, because it's, you know, normally you kind of get, oh, I've heard that many times before. So I knew we're in fertile territory, and we got into these stories and the sounds of thawing ice lakes up in was it Montana, Canada? Mm. It's on the border.
Yeah.
And they sound, as the ice cracks at the end of winter, it sends these cracking sounds through the ice. There's a physics of sound. It means the higher notes travel just a tiny bit faster than the low notes. So to the human ear, you get the high notes hitting before the low notes. So it makes kind of pew, pew, kind of like a laser gun sort of sound. So it makes this crazy alien sounds. I just thought, well, I'm a bit of a Star Wars geek anyway. So for me, it was a really unexpected and kind of charming and delightful little sound, which I never knew existed.
Well, and that actually leads me into my other big question. Of course, I love all of the animals and all that element of the show. It's just brilliant. But it is filmed in over 20 different countries in 7 continents. Mm-hmm. And so for me, each episode that I've watched so far has been like a portal into another world. It's beautiful, remote. I mean, just filled with, like you said, from animal sounds to earth sounds that we've never heard before. So which filming location was your favorite or really stood out? And I should add to my bucket list for travel. Who wants to go first? How about Sam? Why don't you go first?
Let me just have a think about what we. So what I loved about the series was there were sort of noisy episodes. There was the Amazon, the rainforest episode, which is
loud, busy, yeah.
But then there were also really quiet episodes, and I think one of my favorite soundscapes is the Kalahari Desert, the African deserts episode, which is at the start of each show. We drift through the titles and we immerse the audience in the soundscape of that location, and you drift through and it's just eerily quiet and it's beautiful, and for that episode was, you know, it's seemingly silence is golden. It seems in this quiet world it seems quiet, but actually there's all sorts, listen closely, and there's all sorts of surprising and sort of hidden sounds. So I think that one was really special for me. And we had the we recorded the rumbles of elephants. So we were using special infrasonic microphones, so microphones that can record below human hearing. And when we listen to an elephant's rumble, there's all sorts of elements that we can hear that are audible to the human ear. But there's a whole layer of sound that we just can't pick up. And so using these special microphones, we're able to go out and record these sounds, and then using a technique called pitch shifting, which allows us to take the sounds on the lower end of the spectrum and move them up into our hearing range. It took you into a whole new world of sort of elephant communication. And these very deepest rumbles, these rumbles that you feel rather than hear, they vibrate through you. This is how elephants are able to communicate over 100 square miles. Those sounds will travel through the ground, through the air, and they'll be detected by distant herds. And it's how they believe elephants are able to sort of keep in touch over long, long distances. So for me, that episode was, you know, listen carefully, there's a whole world of sound under there. And it's just a beautiful, immersive soundscape and a most beautiful place as well to spend 25 minutes in on the show.
Yes, I've been to South Africa and Zambia and Tanzania, but I've never been there to that region. And yeah. So I will put that on my bucket list for sure.
So yes, and the Namib Desert is one of the most spectacular.
I've had friends travel there and I've heard about it. Yes, it's just wow. And how about for you, Alex? What was a place that stood out?
Oh, for me, it's a difficult question.
I'm sorry.
Portal into, and that's exactly what we were going for, is each episode you launch through the title, and we had a kind of different golden rule for each episode. As Sam said, in the Kalahari, it's a quiet one, and the idea was silence is golden. In the Atlantic coast, the idea was white noise, white water. So it's the crashing sound of waves. The Pacific, which was, I thought, a beautiful sounding episode. It was about long distance communication. I think, and the Polar Worlds one for me was the one which I love them all, but for me was a really interesting sound world to be lost in for 25 minutes. And the idea behind that was two sound worlds, basically, is above and below the ice. It was great. So filming and recording the sounds of penguins, and we've all heard penguins just so many times in natural history. There's many Frozen type shows that have been made about penguins, and there's their signature call they make, which is called the Two Voices Call. And one of the cool things on this series was that we recorded the sounds that the penguins just wandered straight up to the crew. So like we're used to being like lots of field craft, but in Antarctica, because there's no fear of humans, they walk straight up and perform. So I think the recording was relatively easy compared to
some other sure.
But then we used a technique called frequency isolation. So we basically recorded the sounds of the penguin calls. And what it is two different notes they're singing. So the adult penguins disappear off for 3 or 4 days at a time and they leave their chicks behind. And I hadn't realized that they use sound to isolate them, to identify them in the... I kind of figured they'd just look at them and sort of, there's little Bingu, but it's not. It's they've got to listen to them. And so what we did is we split their call up and you can hear the two different notes. And it's the way those two notes interact and oscillate between each other, it creates a completely unique sound signature, which is what the little chicks are listening to. And very cool is that the penguins don't talk over each other, which we discovered. So no, the penguins have this great little etiquette where they let the other penguins do their call and they never speak over each other. And yeah, that episode was just packed full of cool sounds. There's the walruses that Sam was talking about. There are fantastic eider ducks make this very silly, it's a ridiculous mating call, which is a very kind of a comical little call. And yeah, it's just the crazy sounds beneath the water.
I'm not going to do it.
So there's some really cool sounds then. And again, it's just, it feels like a really magical sub-zero sound. It feels a really interesting and cool way into that kind of continent.
Well, I mean, you're really doing a good job selling me on the Antarctic. I had a chance to go there a long, long time ago. I was in southern Patagonia and a fellow best friend and traveler was like, let's do it. We're here. And I said, it seems a little cold for me. But after seeing these beautiful landscapes and opening my ears, not only my eyes, I think it needs to be on the bucket list as well, for sure, especially for us nature lovers out there. It's such a, like you said, so many layers, just a unique area on this beautiful planet. And now with all these locations, and we're going to talk about tech here in a second, because it's super fascinating to me. I love sound. I'm a wannabe guitar player and back in the day. And so I love sound, and some of your techniques just were incredible. So I do want to nerd out about that. But really quick, Alex, I was hoping you could maybe touch on the fact that after the episodes, there's this behind the sounds. And I really enjoyed it in the Himalaya ones. It gave me a little insight, just a little nugget of how much work it took to pull off this massive undertaking, for example, in the Himalayas, to record these sounds and songs over long periods of time, a couple years for the snow leopards, for example. So I was hoping maybe you could touch on the amount of time and film crew, staff, and expertise it took to pull this off.
Yes, great question. It's So the series got commissioned in November 2019. So that was a couple of months before the COVID pandemic hit, yeah. If you cast your mind back there. And then within a couple of months, suddenly the whole world went into shutdown. So it was you know, we got our dream project off the ground and suddenly we couldn't go anywhere. So what it meant was we spent about 6-9 months in the UK researching, getting really deep into all the stories. And then we basically had this conveyor belt of shoots going out and recording expeditions going out. And so must have been in 2021 particularly, it was just back to back to back to back. Was it 73 shoots, I think, somewhere around there? And we were sending crews to all 7 continents. We recorded 3,000 hours of audio.
I hope my editor is listening to that, because I give him about maybe an hour on a long one, you know, and he complains. No, just kidding. Chris does not. He never complains. He's the best. He's the best. But okay, 3,000 hours. Keep going.
3,000 hours of audio, 7 continents. I tried to think how many quarantine days we did coming back in through the UK. And what was interesting was each animal kind of needed its own bespoke approach in order to get them to capture them at their best. And so for the snow leopards is a really great story. And that was, you know, we went out there, we had we have a producer in-house who specializes in big cats and particularly specializes in snow leopards. He filmed out in Ladakh and Indian Himalayas multiple times. And he wants to get the love song of a snow leopard, which had never been captured cleanly and in close proximity before. So we developed our own specific bit of tech to do the story. So to film snow leopards, you tend to rely on two things. One is long lens. So you sit on one edge of a valley and you can see them kind of half a kilometer away, so you don't disturb them. And the other way is use camera traps, so remote controlled camera rigs where you put them out and they walk past and you can get footage. And what we did was we developed new camera traps which had really high quality microphones in them, so we could leave them behind and not only capture the footage of them, but also capture high quality usable audio. So we put a bunch of different camera traps out there and finessed them. And over the course of 2 years, we began to start getting footage in. And we actually got a whole load of really cool, they do make this interesting chuffle sort of, they kind of make this kind of purring sound. And what's great is because the producer is so talented, he'd worked out the routes they would go. So we literally kind of, we have shots of them sitting on the camera traps and you can hear their kind of gurgles and purrings. And we got into the edit and basically we hadn't quite got the sounds. We were trying to work out a different story to tell. And at the 11th hour, part of our Indian team went out and checked the camera traps for one last time. I think we were in week 6 of the edit. And basically they got the shot where the snow leopard walks right up to the camera and just inches away from it. He sings across the valley. And it is not a particularly pleasant sound, I've got to say. Like, snow leopards are beautiful animals, but they're not great singers. So it makes this really weird sounding noise. But again, what's cool is it's evolved that particular call for that environment. So it's that note is a note which scientists believe carry, you know, it doesn't get lost in the wind, it carries long distances. And so they're using the Himalayas like a massive echo chamber. So they'll climb to the highest peak and they'll broadcast their love song through the hills. So that was a massive win for us. And across the series, it was kind of every animal needed a different weird and wonderful technique. And we created tiny little microphones which we could dangle into the burrows of little pika mice, like little gerbil-like mice in the Himalayas. We had hydrophones, to capture the sounds of spinner dolphins. We had teams out in the Pacific off Costa Rica. And underwater, you use a hydrophone, it's just like an underwater microphone. But if you dangle it off the edge of a boat, you hear the bow slaps, you hear the sound of slapping water. So we devised a buoy system, so a group of buoys with a hydrophone dangling off the bottom of it. And we basically floated them off into the water column with a GPS so we could go back and collect them. So we let them float and left them to it. And a few days went past and we couldn't get the sound. On about day 4 or 5, a pod of spinner dolphins, I don't know if they were attracted to it, but basically they swam right past it. And it wasn't a pod, it was a super pod, so 1,000 strong, almost a kilometre wide. And we got our hydrophone ended up right in the middle of this just crazy sort of rave, basically like a dolphin rave. as they went past it, we got this amazing soundscape, which was, you know, absolutely fantastic. We then retrieved the hydrophone, brought it back to Bristol, and we were looking at what's called a spectrogram, and we're looking at the information, and there's all the great sound that we can hear. But at the top of the spectrogram, there's a whole load more information, which we couldn't hear. So we pitch shifted it. So we moved that sound down into our human hearing. And there's this whole secret layer of communications. All the dolphins are whistling to each other, and each one's got its own signature whistle. And it's this complete secret world of sound, and a story that hadn't been told before, which was like one of the most rewarding. It was actually the first story we cut
It was the first one, first shoot out the door.
It was the first shoot, the first and only shoot for a long time. Yes. And then, so I'm digressing, but yes, each one needs a different weird bit of tech.
Well, it went all the specialists and teams and researchers at different continents, as you mentioned. I mean, as I've been watching it, I am just amazed by how much expertise and effort went in to tell these stories that had never been told before. And so I want to applaud, obviously, you gentlemen as the producers, but I know it takes a whole village to get a masterpiece. It's your PhD doctorate over here. I mean, many 5-6 years of your life. So it really is a masterpiece. And you've touched on a good portion of the tech, but I'm wondering, Sam, if you want to talk a little bit about any of the innovative recording techniques or technologies that really struck a chord for you, that is something you'd like to share with our audience.
Yeah, we've talked about the sort of the new microphone technologies, recording higher than ever before, higher sounds than ever before, lower than ever before. One of the things that stood out for me was the field craft. So the field craft of sound recordists is something that's sort of their secret weapons, I guess, in terms of how they're able to get some of these sounds, you know, from recording tiny, tiny sounds like inside a rock pool, the sounds of starfish sort of moving around, as the tiny sounds they make as 100 tiny little feet sort of go over the rock. So those tiny sounds, and using super sensitive microphones to capture those sounds. But also the different types of technology and sound recording equipment. So in the Atlantic Coasts episode, our brilliant sound recordist called Ellie Williams, who is always up for a challenge. And we were there to try and record the sounds of elephant seals. So these huge 3-ton elephant seals having these huge sort of acoustic battles, having sort of physical fights as they're
swimming. Love them. Yes, they're fun.
And scientists are studying, you know, we hear airborne sounds. So sounds come into our ears through the air, but there's a whole world of subterranean sounds. So there's vibrations traveling through the earth, which animals are picking up on, and they believe elephant seals are particularly sort of sensitive to these sounds. So we wanted to try and record those vibrations, those underground sounds. So we use something called a geophone, which is normally used to sort of measure sort of earthquake activity. So it can pick up sort of rumbles from sort of hundreds, thousands of miles away. But as far as I know, as far as we know, nobody's ever tried to record elephant seals with them. So it's
quite niche.
It's quite niche. Yes.
I love it.
There's a brilliant scene with Ellie, and she buries these geophones. And first of all, they pick up the sounds of an elephant seal moving along a beach. It's an ungainly sight, and it's 3 tons of blubber. Yeah, exactly. Just sort of slapping its way up the sand. But scientists believe that the sound of the vibrations from these great beasts moving around are picked up by other elephant seals, and they're able to sort of assess size. So it's a way of saying, you know, if the ground shakes beneath you, you know, a big elephant seal's on its way. So we managed to record those sounds. But even more interesting and sort of untapped into by science, scientists still don't know how they're using this information, but we could also pick up the subterranean sort of vibrations of their immense calls traveling through the sand, And there's a great, in one of the behind the sounds, the sort of, you know, making of sequences, we've got Ellie there and she's recording the airborne sounds. And suddenly she gets this rumble from the geophone and it's completely overwhelming. It's a sound she's never heard before. It sounds like Godzilla or something. It sounds like the earth is shaking. And so it's I love the idea that new tech can take us into these worlds and allow us to sort of experience sounds, vibrations through the ground in ways that other animals are detecting, but we're, you know, there's a whole world of sound actually beneath our feet that we're just not picking up.
Yeah, and then a way to translate it into something us humans can appreciate and understand, because we always talk about in the podcast, so a lot of these animals have super senses, some of which we don't even have when you think about echolocation and things like that. So to be able to take sound that we typically can't hear and to let us into that world is just, it's so intimate. It's so eye-opening. One of my favorites from what I watched so far is that male orb weaver spider.
Oh, yes.
And I love all animals and I love spiders, but I, as a person that works mostly with mammals, I don't do insects. And so I was just so captivated. And that's one of the ones I kept rewinding and like, is this real? Like, what's going on here? And the way that he uses the vibration pads on the bottom of his little tiny 8 feet to make sound by plucking the web. And as a musician, I was like, this is incredible. And then it basically lets the giant female know not to eat him, that he is a friend. He's a friend, you know, possibly a lover, and not, you know, not to eat him basically, yeah. at least not yet. And yes. So, yeah. And then he uses vibrations on his abdomen, a new word to me called tremulations. See, I'm always learning and it like puts her in a trance and it's just, listeners, you have to check this out. It's really out of this world from what we norm. I love. I mean, one of my favorite sounds in the world was hearing a male lion roaring while I was camping in a tent in Tanzania. Luckily, there were guards, so I felt safe. But that's one of my favorite. But that's an easy sound to hear, right? Like and so to go into these tiny worlds with these tiny microphones and then be able to translate it is just it's a great story. So
but it's interesting, isn't it? How sound, you know, you'll always remember the sound of that lion roaring, and it will take you back there and all those emotions you felt at the time.
I just got goosebumps and I can hear it. And that's why sound is so, we know research knows that for memories and triggering things like that. So but when you're telling these stories of the animals, and Alex, I'll start with you. Obviously there's lots of cool sounds, the snow leopard singing, the male orb weaver vibrating the strings, underwater courtship calls you've talked about, which are just not commonly heard because they're underwater and so much to learn. But throughout this journey of 3 years or more, plus more editing, what did you learn about animal communication, and what do you hope the viewers that watch this series will learn about animal behavior and communication through your sound storytelling?
Yeah, the thing I learned was how they use sound very differently to us. And, you know, I touched on that earlier, is we are predominantly a visual animal. And so we use sound for one thing, which is basically communicating. But, you know, your story there with the spider, that's a classic for me, is who knew that the spiders use it? I mean, they're using it as a kind of to court and woo his partner, you know, through music. But then the tremulation allows, you know, puts her in this docile, it's kind of like a slight sleepy state. So
there's some smooth jazz that can do that to me, for sure.
So, but, you know, that's what a weird story. And for me, it was looking at the kind of, it's the weird ways that animals use sound. They use it as a weapon. The pistol shrimp, they have these kind of shoot-offs. And they snap their claws and it creates a sonic boom. And it's like we kind of told the story a bit like a kind of Wild West shootout. What was cool with that was we filmed the shootout using high speed cameras. And then with our time stretching, our sound time stretching, we could also stretch the sound so that for the first time we got the slow-mo footage and the slow-mo sound or slow-mo audio synced up, so we could see exactly what was happening at what point. And what we can show visually and acoustically is this, when they snap their claws shut, it creates a cavity in the water. So it creates a little air bubble. And as that air bubble collapses, that's where that's the explosion. Talk about Oppenheimer and the multi-Oscar award-winning film. But these little shrimp are basically creating their own little nuclear explosions and having the shootout. And it's just these weird stories. And, you know, yeah, come for the celebrities, but stay for the weirdos. That's kind of, for me, that's what the series is about. Come and see a snow leopard, but then stick around for a weird little pika mouse, or come and listen to howler monkeys and jaguars, but then there's a clubwing mannequin that's a bird that creates a beautiful, it doesn't sing, but if it does sing, it doesn't sing very well, but it creates its love song through rubbing its wings. So it creates it's like a violin bird. It's this beautiful, high-pitched, incredible, incredible courtship call. So yeah, for me, it's the weirdness and diversity of the natural world. And I think the other big thing is sound's a really useful tool for exploring how the natural world is changing very rapidly. And bioacoustics is a bit of biology, which really clearly shows it's a really good indicator for the health of the planet. And you're a runner, we'll run, and you run through past hedgerows and it looks pretty, but they're silent. And, you know, you can go through a forest, and it could be a beautiful looking forest. It's green and it feels packed with life, but it's the noise it makes that is the key thing. And I think it's a really interesting way of looking at the health of the planet. Sam, you work particularly with Bernie and doing that sort of side of things.
So I went to California actually to meet up and interview Bernie Krause, who is the godfather of sound in the natural world. He's been recording for sort of 40 years. He's got thousands of hours of material, but what Bernie's been doing is going, he lives in California, and his local park is Sugarloaf State Park. And every year on the same day in April, at the same time in the morning, dawn, he goes out and he's been recording the dawn chorus there since 1993, I think. Wow. And he's been comparing how those sounds change over the years. And you listen back to 1993 and there's this rich cacophony of bird song and insect hums. You can hear some frogs, you can hear a stream sort of babbling away in the background. And as the years progress and drought takes hold in California, it gets quieter and quieter. And in 2017, Bernie describes what he calls his first silent spring, where there's barely a peep to be heard. You look at that landscape and it looks very similar as it did in the early 90s. But the loss of bird song and sound, natural sound, tells us that there's a problem. And it tells us before you see those changes. So sound is a really good indicator that there's a bigger problem in the environment. But from that, you know, Bernie's work sparked this whole new sort of area of science called bioacoustics, and people are using it to do amazing things. We worked with a team called Rainforest Connection, who put they call them guardians, and they're basically listening posts. They started off as sort of Apple phones, just put up in the canopy of rainforests to create a live stream of sound, and now they've got them all over in rainforests across the world, streaming sort of 24/7, and they can pick up the sound. They can pick up sort of rare species. So if you want to track a sort of rare bird species or jaguars, or you can use sound to do that far more effectively than using sort of camera trap technology. So sound is a brilliant way of monitoring rare species, but also even more cleverly, they also can pick up the sound of chainsaws, and they can now use AI to pick up those sounds. So if the sound of a chainsaw is picked up, it will pick up the sonic signature of a chainsaw, and it will alert the local ranger in the area that there's chainsaws, people, there's illegal logging going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. So then they're then able to react in real time and go and investigate what's happening. So sound is a really powerful tool in conservation, and will become a really powerful tool in conservation. I think we're only just seeing the beginning of that. But working with people like Rainforest Connection and all sorts of amazing other bioacousticians. It was a really interesting and really sort of hopeful sign that actually sounds a really powerful tool for saving species.
Well, it is. And that leads me into one of my final questions as far as I'd love to talk briefly about episode 12, Listening to the Earth. So throughout the series, it definitely seems that conservation and raising awareness about the natural world is a theme. Mm-hmm. So how do you hope this intimate dive into the sonic landscape of the animals and the environment will impact viewers and hopefully inspire them to protect these beautiful habitats? Sam, do you want to go first?
I think, hopefully, first off, it will encourage people just to get out there and listen to the natural world and just lose yourself in the sounds of a forest or a park or whatever, wherever you live and whatever's nearby. Just get out and listen to those sounds and enjoy listening to those sounds. Maybe take your headphones off and just listen to what's around you.
Unless you're listening to the series.
Unless you're listening to the series, yeah, exactly.
Good one, yeah, exactly.
There's lots of new research out in the last sort of couple of years just about the importance for mental health and sort of anxiety levels and stress levels. Listening to the natural world is good for you, basically. And so my take-home message would be get out there and listen to the series. There's research that suggests that even sort of watching and listening to natural history on wildlife films on television can be good for stress levels and anxiety.
Oh yeah, there is a phenomenal study I always open with in my animal behavior and ecology course I teach, where they had people they went camping for the weekend out in the natural world somewhere, and they took their blood before and then after the 3 days, and several stress biomarkers went down and stayed down for up to a month after that weekend, and then inflammatory markers went down, things like that. So then, you know, scientists are like, well, let's just put them out in nature for one night. Same thing, but they didn't let all of them went down, but it only lasted a couple weeks. And so scientists, you gotta love them. So then they're like, okay, let's just have them look at pictures of nature, not in nature, just looking at it. And I'm not sure, I don't want to misquote the paper, so I don't know if they had the sound going or not, but definitely looking at it.
Yeah.
And by darn, their biomarkers went down, not as dramatically as when they were actually in nature and immersed in 3D, but just looking at it, some stress and inflammation markers went down. They didn't stay down for a whole month like they did with the camping group, but just fascinating. I mean, I felt, like I said, I've been watching the series and I feel better afterwards. So I'm an N of one. how about you, Alex? Is there any big conservation, protect the earth, protect the animals message I think there's a huge underlying theme of that for me when I watched this series, Earth Sounds, but something you'd like to share with the audience?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's obviously discussed a little bit the Listening to the Planet episode. We were very keen to make sure that each film showcased the wonder of the natural world, but also acknowledges and explores the kind of the way that it's changing. For me, I'm a strong believer in it's you can't preach the converted. And natural history telly's got to be inclusive and engaging and fun. And you need to get people to watch it. And for me, the cool thing about the series is the shows are 30 minutes long. The show's actually 22 minutes long. They're as long as an episode of Friends with a little making of at the end. And for me, that feels really accessible to an audience. You can click on it, you can watch a couple, and then you can go off and do whatever else you want to. It's not like an hour's commitment to sit down and you got to...
No, and I sat down with that. I'm like, I'm just going to watch the one right now because I need to work and take care of the kids and house and go for a run in nature. And I did end up actually binging 3 episodes, but you can definitely do just one at a time, and they're very, very accessible but very impactful. Like each one, I was just texting friends and sharing the tidbits of information that I learned just from watching and being in awe.
Cool. And I think that's what we were going, one of the bingeable series, basically. You can do three in a row, you can do five in a row, you can do one. And it feels like it's easy to come to. It showcases the natural world in at its finest. And it's not, I think in the series also, our kind of mantra was audio first. So it's always like the audio was, it was all about the way we shot the series in terms of the cinematography. We had this idea of drifting on the airwaves. So it was a metaphor visually that the camera's always drifting. And we had these, we have a brilliant hyperlapse photographer who creates these sound journeys. So there's these amazing seamless sequences where we travel through worlds. And it's all about creating this journey into sound. And it feels, to me, it feels fun. Like the whole idea behind the series is not scared to have a bit of fun. So it's not a serious kind of heavy duty bit of natural history. It's a beautiful landmark, exciting, engaging, fun watch. And it shows off nature with belching sea anemones, exploding shrimp, kind of amazing humpback whales. It's basically got all the coolest animals making the most amazing sounds.
Yeah.
New angles. It's packed for new science, new stories, and new visuals. And for me, that's, you know, getting the audience to fall in love with nature. And there's that famous quote that, you know, everyone loves nature, right, when they're a kid, but it's when you grow out of it. So at everyone's core, there's a love of nature. So it's just trying to get people to re-engage. And I think that for me is the most powerful thing, and falling in love with our planet, which is this incredibly precious and also incredibly rare and valuable commodity, which we all rely on, is the key thing that hopefully our series and all natural history series strive to accomplish.
Well, and I love this too, as far as accessibility is, I mean, it's great for my kids. I have a 7-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 3-year-old. They were all engaged, obviously. It hit all the senses. And so if you're listening to this and you have kids, or, you know, someone with kids, definitely share this series. It's
how do they find the spider? Could they watch the spider, or do they get freaked out?
No, they're, cause they're animal. I mean, we live in Florida, so they're catching lizards and all sorts of things. Right. So my boys are probably a little bit more wild than most children, but, and on many levels, but, no, they thought it was cool. That's the thing. You make it so accessible and cool and tell the story. So it's not scary. It's like, I want to know more. I want to pause it and rewind it and hear that again. So yeah, that was really fun. And now, just briefly, because I have both my zoologist background and my kind of film love of all things camera background, could you each briefly share with us a piece of advice for anyone listening to this podcast that is interested in perhaps getting involved with wildlife photography or nature documentaries? What would be your one or two solid pieces of advice? Go ahead, Sam.
I would say start in your backyard, start on your doorstep. And get out, you know, we've got cameras on our phones now, but just get some basic kit and tell the stories that are around your local patch. Because that's what's fascinating. Wherever you live in the world, there are little pockets of wild places, and those wild places are particular to that place and particular to your sort of neighborhood. So I would say, if you're interested, go out and get exploring, find out what's in the woods behind your house or in the park, and just start filming some stuff and just exploring, start local, expand out from there.
Absolutely. And how about you, Alex? Any advice?
I concur with Sam's advice. I think, yeah, start local.
It's pretty sound advice.
Great advice. I'd add to that as well. We're always thinking, see things differently. And there's so many kind of people out there recording natural history in different ways. And our thing as a business is always try and see things differently. And so you go hit your backyard and then think, oh, how can I do it slightly differently? And what's my little twist or my little kind of USP I can put on it? And I think by the nature of the show we just made and the one before, it's trying to find a different angle into natural history. And I think people will always gravitate and be interested and excited by anything that feels unusual. So, yeah, local natural history is always the best with an unusual twist. I reckon that's my, that'd be my
sound advice.
Sound advice. Well, hopefully sound advice.
Hopefully. Oh, no, it's great. I mean, especially like thinking of the spiders, you can go find those in your, even by, I find my house, probably because I live in Florida, but you can find nature really anywhere. And it might be tiny nature, but that's a great way to start. And we always want to encourage people to do local things. And then, because there's so much that can be done locally as far as conservation goes, wildlife, science, things like that. So now that's very good advice. Thank you very much. And now my last question or comment is, I know after 3 to 5 years of this filming Earth Sounds and just the massive undertaking that, once again, unless you were part of the team, you probably can't fully grasp, which is because you guys make it look almost easy and seamless, which I know it's not. But are there any little tidbits of what projects you might be planning to tackle next? So we have the at night, we have the sounds. Maybe I could put in a pitch for bioluminescent colors of nature. Or let me see. I also like touch, you know, is one of the way the animals engage with each other and communicate. So maybe smells. I don't know. What any hints, or is it top secret what we're doing next, team?
Smell-o-vision. We're going to do a special smell-o-vision special.
Smells
of animals. we're making another series with Apple TV Plus, which has been announced, and that's looking at, it's a conservation facing series, which is looking at some of the most endangered animals. So we've gone from animals at night, shooting a series in the pitch black, through to animal sounds, which was supposed to be a slightly easier series, but we had the COVID pandemic. Yeah. And now we've gone for the hardest animals to film in the world. So we've got our work cut out, and it's going to be a brilliant series. But I can't say any more than that. So that's all that's been announced thus far. So yeah, that's keeping us busy at the moment, and it's going to be fantastic when it comes out.
Oh, I just got goosebumps. So I am definitely along for the ride, and hopefully it won't be another 5 years, but you never know. But we will definitely have to get together and chat again about that, because I think that'll be another very important and incredible story to tell. And your team is just some of the best storytellers out there that I've seen and had the luxury and been blessed enough to interact with. So from the bottom of my heart at All Creatures Podcast, our team wants to thank you for the work that you do. And I really hope that everyone out there listening will check out Apple TV, the new 12-part documentary series, Earth Sounds. It's narrated, we didn't even mention this, but it's narrated by Emmy Award nominee Tom Hiddleston. It's a masterpiece, obviously for the ears, but really for all of the senses. So check it out. We'll link it, of course, on our social media and as well as on our show notes for the podcast. So Alex, Sam, you are brilliant. I appreciate your patience and efforts in recording these animals and making it so accessible to us at home to be able to appreciate the wonders of nature and get inspired to help this planet last for another eternity. So thank you for your efforts. And this interview has been fantastic today. So thank
fantastic.
You. Well, thank you, Alex and Sam, so much for hanging out with me today and telling your story about the different soundscapes of this beautiful world that we live in. I just love this series, so thank you for doing it. And to all of our listeners out there, be sure to check out Apple TV, the new 12-part documentary series, Earth Sounds. It's narrated by Emmy Award nominee Tom Hiddleston, which is just incredible. It's just a masterpiece. For the ears, for the eyes, for all of the senses. So thank you so much, and I really appreciate your time today.